Thank you to all of you for who you are and what you are, because some of you don't know it, some of you do know it, but some of you don't know it, maybe, how much you are to us and the support you are, and thank you. Thank you for being faithful. That helps us be faithful. So thank you for that. Making goals. I liked some of those thoughts there. Appreciated that. Sometimes we've heard people talk about New Year's resolutions, and if we just make these goals randomly, but we're not committed to some practical death, is usually what it is, right? Goals usually have death hidden up inside of them if we're really going to accomplish them. Death to self, death to what I want, death to the flesh, death to whatever it is. So may God help us. Help us learn how to walk with Him, die to ourselves, and live for Him. Right? Sometimes the most deep statements feel the most trite sometimes, but they're real. Someone once said, the tendency of a fire is to go out. You ever heard that? I think it's true. The tendency of a fire is to kind of die out. We build fires in our wood stoves. We build fires to roast our hot dogs. We build all sorts of fires. And if we just build a fire and walk away, what happens? It dies and goes out. That's the tendency. Excuse me. The tendency of a fire is to die out. I think we can also say the tendency of a soldier is to lay down his sword and rest. Right? That's the tendency. You get tired. Praise God, I've never been on the battlefield, but we all know what it's like to work hard. And we work hard and we work hard, and if you just keep going and keep going and keep going, the tendency, after a while, you get tired. Tendency of a soldier is to lay down his sword and rest. And I just want to remind us this morning, I know you all know it, but I want to remind you all and myself, brothers and sisters, don't forget you're in a war. You're in a war. Don't forget it. Because the tendency of a soldier is to get tired, lay down his sword, and rest. I just want to remind us, don't forget you're in a war. I know what it's like to be tired. Most of you that have been walking, pursuing God long enough, you know what it's like to just get tired. Just worn out. If this person would just straighten up, or if that person would just do something different, or if I would just begin, you know, quit having this problem, or and the tendency is to get tired. Brothers and sisters, we're in a war, okay? I want you to open your Bibles to 1 Timothy. I have been spending some time in 1 and 2 Timothy, and I just want to read you four scriptures that stuck out to me. And talk about this principle a little bit of don't forget you're in a war. And then we'll come back and look at these scriptures after we've gone through them. We'll just read through them. Then we'll come back and look at the context and say, okay, what's around these scriptures to get our hands on some practical application. But I have been spending some time in 1 and 2 Timothy, and something has stuck out to me. Supposedly, these were some of Paul's last words written. Paul's passing off the scene, very possibly in prison or in captivity of some sort, and he knows he's passing off the scene. He has lived his life, he has fought many battles, he has lived through a tremendous amount of things, and he's pinning some words to his son Timothy in 1 and 2 Timothy, some of his last words before he's all done. His fight is over. And there's something, as I read, I've been doing repetitive reading the same thing, 1 and 2 Timothy a little bit, quite a few times lately. And here's, I'm just going to pull out four scriptures that stood out to me as one of the themes I think that may have been on Paul's heart. We can get various themes. I think this is maybe one of them. 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 18. We're just going to grab this verse, four different verses, then we'll come back and look at the context a little more. This charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy. Timothy, I have something to say to you. I'm passing off the scenes. You are going to carry on. You're the one that's going to grab the baton and walk on, Timothy. I'm going to die. My time's just about up. Son Timothy, according to the prophecies which went before on thee, that thou mightest war a good warfare. Timothy, I'm not promising you an easy life. I'm not promising relaxation. I'm not promising you, Timothy, that it's just going to be all smooth sailing. In fact, I want to tell you something. It's going to be war. Now, we know, we all believe, we're non-resistant Christians. That's what we believe. And we're learning to do that in everyday life, right? Brother, sister, husband, wife, you know, brother in the church, siblings, poke. Just respond with a humble attitude. All the way to the inside, right? Not just on the inside and calm on the outside, but all the way to the inside. We don't resist. We don't rise up. We don't know what is, right? And so Paul takes a term that is commonly put in a different context and sticks it in a context that makes us a little bit jolted and think. War. Well, we Christians, we don't believe in war, do we? And Paul's saying, you do. In fact, you must believe in war. War's awful. War's nasty. Some of us, a lot of us, most of all of us probably, are a little bit aware, at least, of Russia and Ukraine, Israel and Gaza there. All the war that's happening, you get little updates, bombs, people freezing, their houses crumbled, and some of their family died and some are alive. And just the agony and the misery and the awfulness of war. And we look at war and its devastation, we say that's awful. But the picture Paul's trying to point out is, over there are men who are fighting, and they're tired, and they're weary, and they don't stop. They keep on fighting. They don't just say, you know what, this is miserable, I give up, I'm going home, all done. They don't do that. They can't do that. They're not allowed to do that. They're not trained to do that. In the midst of this awful, nasty battle that's rigorous, hard, and difficult, putting up with food that's not so good, somebody gave us a while back a box of these MREs, meals ready to eat. Supposedly, I'm not sure, but supposedly that's what many times soldiers eat. And they gave us these, I think it was over COVID in Vermont, they were handing these out to the public. I don't know if they thought they were going to go bad. They've been sitting there for so many years, it's time to move them on. They needed a fresh supply. Obviously, it was over COVID, and so I don't know. We ended up with some boxes of these things, and we opened them up, and we ate some of it. It doesn't taste like my wife's cooking. I don't know if any of you have ever had them. We can kind of get a kick out of it. Me and the boys, Lara goes somewhere or something, and me and the boys were left, and it's kind of a cheat. You know, you pull the thing out, and it's food in there, and you stick it in this little packet, mix a little water with the packet. It gets hot. Anyway, I don't know how many of you have seen these things, and it's just these little packets of mush and some crackers and some, you know, various things. It's just not that good. We can eat it and kind of think it's fun once or twice. Try doing it all day, next day, next day. They don't have an easy life. It's the life of a soldier. It's difficult, it's hard, it's rigorous, and they keep on going. Paul says he takes out of a normal context and sticks this word war and sticks it into the Christian life and says, Timothy, war. War, a good warfare. 1 Timothy 6. Verse 12. Timothy, fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life. He says, fight.
Well, Paul, fight?
Yes, Timothy, fight. I'm again, Paul's saying, pulling a word that is normally a bad word and in a bad context, I'm inserting it into the Christian life, and I'm saying, Timothy, fight. It's not a game for children. You're in a war for as men and women. And he's saying, pick up your sword. Timothy, the tendency of a fire is to go out. Timothy, the tendency of a soldier is to lay down his sword and rest. Timothy, fight. Fight the good fight of faith. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3. Again, this is a second letter to Timothy, even closer to the end of his life. Last letters and words. Thou therefore, Timothy, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Timothy, be a soldier. It's going to be hard. I realize I'm only looking at one half of the Christian life. We could talk about joy and peace, and I understand that that's all there. Can you allow me to be imbalanced and look at one aspect here this morning? Timothy, it's going to be hard. Any of you ever felt like it's hard? Lord, this is hard. Hard on my flesh. Hard on what I want. Hard on my wife. Hard on my children. Hard on the whatever it is. Lord, this is hard sometimes. And yes, it's hard. Timothy, endure hardness. Keep on going whether you feel like it or not, Timothy. Do it anyway. No man that warreth. You see that word again? War. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life that he may please him who's chosen him to be a soldier. You and I have been chosen. God says, Mickey, I want you to be one of my soldiers. And he says, Brother Dean, I want you to be one of my soldiers. And he's saying that to each. We've been chosen to be a soldier in a war that is raging and going on all the time. How many soldiers do you know of that are good soldiers down in their foxholes have decided, you know what, I'm just going to make this foxhole just a little bit nicer today. Skip the fighting today. Did enough fighting yesterday. I'm going to let the fighting go and I'm going to hide down here in my little foxhole. We're going to make it just a little bit nicer, a little cozier. Let's see. Let's put a fresh coat of paint on my foxhole. Let's hang a little cute little plaque that will just encourage me when my feelings are down. And again, I'm not against paint and I'm not against plaques that are encouraging. But do you get the picture? And he gets distracted with what he's supposed to be doing. And he gets all entangled with this life. No, soldier. You don't have time for that. You're in a war. You don't have time to sit back and relax and make life just a little bit cozier. Don't get entangled with the affairs of this life. You have been chosen to be a soldier. And last one, the fourth verse here in 2 Timothy 4, verse 7. Paul is saying again, the end of his life, I have fought a good fight. I did it, Timothy. I went through life and I fought and I fought and I fought. I was in a war. I was in difficulty. I was a soldier. I kept enduring and enduring and enduring. Timothy, I fought a good fight and I finished my course and I've kept the faith. And these four little scriptures that stuck out to me as I was reading and rereading and rereading 1 and 2 Timothy, there's something about fight. As Paul's passing off the scenes at the end of his life, it seems to me there's a fight. There's a war going on, and Paul is trying to say, don't forget about the war. This is the end of Paul's life. Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. Was that a war? What do you think? Genesis 1 and 2. Was there war happening there? Was that fairly peaceful and beautiful? I think that was peaceful and beautiful, Genesis at the beginning, right? And if we turn to the end of the Bible, we find Revelation 21 and 22. How's that? That's beautiful. That's glorious. And we should all be looking forward to the day when the war is over. And it'll be beautiful. Revelation 21, 22. But between, from Revelation 3 through 19, we're in a war, right? And that's where we're at. 1 and 2 was glorious. Revelation 21 and 22, that's glorious. But right now we're in the middle. And in fact, all the way up to the end, and I'm just going to read a few verses here in Revelation 19. You don't have to turn there if you don't want. You know what they say here. Revelation 19, verse 11, "And I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon it was called Faithful and True. In righteousness he doth judge and make," what? "War." Here he is, still making war. "His eyes has a flame of fire. On his head were many crowns. He had a name written that no man knew but he himself. He was clothed with a vesture, dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. And the armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron." And we could go on and read more of this. Verse 19, "And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army." We have the enemies of our God saying, "We're at war also." And they're coming to war against him. And we're in the midst of it. And it's war. We haven't reached Revelation 20 or 21. Verse 20 says, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having a key." Anyway, we go on. Oh, sorry, 21 and 22. "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth." First heaven and the first earth and the war were gone. All gone, right? And there's a new Jerusalem. But brothers and sisters, we're in between Genesis 1 and 2 and Revelation 20 and 21. We're in that. And that's war. And I just want to remind us, don't forget that you're in a war. Don't forget. There's a war happening. Whether you're fighting or not, there's a war going on. If you're laying down your sword and you're relaxing, the enemy isn't. He's still fighting. Don't forget, you're in a war. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I'm just going to remind us again. Remember in Matthew 13, the parable of the sower? The sower had, you can say, 4 or 6 different soils. But the first one he went to sow, he sowed seed, and the seed fell where?
Wayside.
Seed sowed on the wayside. Did that seed bring forth fruit? Mm-mm. Devil came and took it away. You think that's one of his war plans? It's definitely one of his war plans. The second soil he's sowing, the second soil the seed fell on was the stony. Isn't that right? Stony? And in the stony soil, it springs up, it takes a little bit of root in it, it's growing, but there's stones in there. And what happens? The sun's beating down. Right? The war is happening. And what do? They give up. They wither. And they say, "Can't do it. It's just too hard." And he says, that's like unto what? Remember stony soil? No, that's the next one. It withers. Why does it wither? Sun. And what is that likened unto?
The enemy's war.
Okay. He says, I don't have it open here. Pressures. Not the cares of this world. People. Pressures of people. How does it say it? When they give up with... Here's my term. I'll put it simply. It's persecution. Pressures from people because they're trying to follow Christ. So my term is you have the soil that the devil just takes away, hard soil. Then you have the stony, which is people pressures. Persecution. Then the next soil we have, he sows seed and it lands on soil and it grows up also, but what else grows with it?
Thorny.
So you have these thorns growing up. And the thorns and the good seed is battling to grow. They're trying to grow. But what happens? The thorns win out. Right? And what does Jesus liken that unto? What's that like? That's right. Cares of this world. And then we have the good soil. So just to try to make it simple, we have people who don't accept. People who do, but persecution overwhelms them. People who do, but cares of this life overwhelm them. And people who do and don't get overwhelmed. They continue with patience. If you remember that, I don't feel like we have a lot of persecution right now. Will it come? Maybe. There's a little bit, but there's not a lot. What are we, in general, going to be tempted with the most? It's going to be cares of this life. It's going to be thorns coming up, trying to choke us out. So we have a battle that we're in. Someday, I think we may deal with some more persecution. We all agree, surely that's going to come one of these days. But we don't have as much of that right now. We have these thorns growing up. But we're in the middle of the ground that we could get distracted. Right? And I want to remind us, don't forget, we're in a war. There's a war raging, and there are thorns all around us that are growing up around us, and the tendency is it can choke us and make us relax and lay down our sword a little bit. Somebody once called it, it's kind of strong language, somebody once called it the satanic lullaby. Right? You get that? The satanic lullaby. There was a man and his wife, and I think it was in the Middle East. They were followers of Christ, but every day when they got up in the morning, they looked at each other and they said, "This just might be the last day we see each other." So before he went to work, they looked at each other and said, "I'm going to be faithful today. You're going to be faithful today. We might not see each other tonight." It was in a heavily Muslim persecuted area. And they went about their day. And they looked for ways to sow seeds, speak truth. And they committed to each other they're going to do it, but knowing they may not see each other. Because of circumstances, they had an opportunity to come to the West. Not sure where it was. They left that area, came to the West. They lived here for a little while. And it wasn't terribly long when they looked at each other, and I think the story goes that the wife looked at her husband and said, "We can't do this. We're going to die. We're going to die spiritually if we keep living here. Let's go back." So at the risk of their life, they said, "Let's go back." The death of the satanic lullaby of just a nice, having it easy, not that many pressures. They weren't used to the soil with thorns. They were used to the soil with stones and sun, right? They knew how to fight in this battleground. In this battleground of persecution and pressures, they knew how to fight. And they could look at each other with honest hearts in the morning and say, "I'm going to be faithful. You're going to be faithful. I may not see you tonight, but we're going to stay faithful to Jesus." But when they changed soils and they came to this soil that had thorns, this soil that it was good growing, and the things of this life and the pressures of the things that they had in the West, and it was so easy and it was nice, and they knew the satanic lullaby was putting them to sleep. And they said, "We don't know how to fight and stay alive here." They said, "Let's go back there." That's not the answer. I'm not saying we're all supposed to leave this soil and go over to another soil where there's persecution. There's a lot of people that turn their backs on Christ and give up. And they say no. And they lose out in this soil too. Jesus didn't say this soil's better. But over here, the soil that we're in with these thorns and these things to distract us, the tendency is to forget you're in a war. Over there, they know it. And some of them die from it. Here, the tendency is to go to sleep and to relax. Brothers and sisters, don't forget, you're in a war. Sometimes, some of you know this and have experienced it, it's a little easier to be reminded in some settings that you're in a war. If you live in a place where a crazy man walks up and down the street, it's just a small little reminder. Right, Andres? It's just a small little reminder. And you have Charlie. I don't know if he's still around or not. He would walk up and down the street. One day, my wife was in the kitchen cooking, and our house was fairly open. We lived the same house as in Zanzibar as the school was in. And my wife wanted it that way. It was open. People would walk in and out, doors open from the school, from the street. And she's in here cooking one day, and she turns around, not having heard a sound, and there stands Shadi, the crazy man. And I made her jump. Now, he's known to be, mostly, a fairly gentle one. When they're not, yeah, that's a bigger challenge. But I made her jump. And to have a man standing behind you watching you cook. I honestly think he was probably messed with him. His mind was messed with drugs. That'd be my guess. From the knowledge I had, he actually probably ruined himself with drugs. Demonic, probably not. Demonic pressures, right? Temptations, sure. So sometimes to divide between demonic, drugs, mental illnesses, you know, truly satanic. Sometimes fear, that's a huge one in some of those places. And sometimes it, fear is the core of what's driving these people and they go odd. Anyway, when you see those things, or maybe out back of your house, they have a wedding celebration party. And it usually doesn't end up in purity. There's immorality, things that happen. And in the midst of this, the drums start going, and they get faster and louder, and somebody goes stiff as a board. So stiff, a couple of guys, or one of them grabs his head, a couple more grab his feet, and haul him inside. Stiff. Sorry, just my shoestring. When you see things like that, you remember, you're in a war. And before we, as we were saying goodnight to our children, we always prayed for our children. And when those kind of things happen on a regular basis, and, you know, I could go on and share lots of things, lots of those stories, you know what? You remember you're in a war. And we pray over our children. God, protect these children. We know the enemy's out there seeking to kill, steal, and destroy. And because of these things happening, we don't forget we're in a war. But somehow, it's easy. Over here in this soil that's good soil, and it's pretty easy, and it's pretty soft, it's easy to forget that we're in a war and get distracted. I'm just going to go on. Back to 1 Timothy. Let's go through these scriptures just a little bit. First one was 1:18. So, here we have Paul, and he's sharing this theme in a few different times through these epistles. This theme of war. This theme of a fight. And with this theme, I want us to go back and look at these scriptures now and look at some surrounding verses. Okay, Paul, so you're talking about a war. You're talking about a fight. And you're saying, Timothy, don't forget, you're in a war. What's he talking about? What can we get our hands on? Is there some practical comments in here to give us something practical to hold on to and to put into our life? So in 1 Timothy, the first one, chapter 1, verse 18, he says, this charge I'm giving you, Timothy, that by them, these prophecies, thou mightest war a good warfare. And he goes on. And he says a couple things. First off, he says, holding faith and a good conscience. Number one, hold a faith and a good conscience. And I'm going to say something. You children, listen. Keep a clear conscience. Principle number one. Keep a clear conscience. In the midst of this war, we must have a conscience that's clear and a faith that's steadfast. Children, if something bothers you, do you know what you're supposed to do about it? You know what you're supposed to do when you know, uh-oh, I did something wrong. You know what you're supposed to do about it? Go talk to your parents and tell them. You know that? That blesses parents. They want to help you keep a clear conscience. And when you feel bothered by something, you go talk to your parents and say, Daddy, Mom, whatever,
And it's hard to do, but just say it anyway. That will help your conscience. And you get to live with a clear conscience, not being bothered by things you did. But not just children. Brothers and sisters, let's live with a clear conscience.
In this warfare, one of the best ways the enemy wants to get to us, one of the ways, I should probably skip my superlatives, one of the ways the enemy wants to get to us is for us to get used to a cloudy conscience, and then it gives him opportunity to get in there and start working at our hearts and our lives and getting us to make wrong choices, wrong concepts, wrong, because we're used to just dirty. We're used to it not being clean and clear. Hold this thing of faith in him and a free, clear conscience as your baseline, your solidity to stand on in this war. If you allow it to bother and bother and bother you, you're not going to be able to fight properly. Hold faith and a clear conscience. Keep it clear. Washed clean. Nothing between. Nothing to bother me. And I realize sometimes we have oversensitive consciences. And if that's the case, go to your authorities, a brother, a sister. Ask for help so that you can learn to walk clear-conscienced all the time. That's baseline. That's foundational. Holding a faith and a clear conscience. If we're going to fight in this war, that's a must. He goes on. Of whom is Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have delivered... I'm sorry, they've made shipwreck. I didn't finish the sentence in verse 19, did I? Holding faith and a good conscience, which some having put away concerning faith have made shipwreck. They didn't stay on the right side of the war. Hymenaeus and Alexander ended up on the wrong side, whom I have delivered unto Satan. They left our forces! They didn't stay engaged in the war, and they've joined the other side. We've handed over to Satan. Their conscience got a mess. And they didn't hold faith that they may learn not to blaspheme. And then he says, I exhort therefore, and I'm just going to pull some of these. I realize we could make a whole bunch out of this. I got overwhelmed trying to figure out what to and what not to. So allow me just to pull a few. I exhort therefore that first of all. So number two. Number one, solid faith, clear conscience. You can stay in the war. Number two, I exhort first of all, Paul says, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men. And we could go on. First of all, pray. That's number two here, these points I'm pulling out in this war. Pray. I have been telling myself the past few weeks, shared with the brothers at Danby and a few other places, I think Mickey actually believes what I'm going to tell you. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails a little bit. I think that's actually what I believe. Because I look at my life. I'm a person, I love efficiency. If I know this is going to get twice as much done as this, I'll choose this. That's a no-brainer for me. I think according to my life, I must believe. And I say it as a confession. I need a change. Your brother shared, I need a change in this. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails a little, is what I actually think I believe, according to my life. I don't know about you, but think about it. If you were to, and someone else, or God, sure, was to look at your life, usually by our life we can judge what our real belief system is. Not by our words and by our saying amen to things that we read, but by our life. So if God was to judge your life, and God, other people, whatever, and they would look at your life, what would they say? Oh, he believes effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Look at him! That's why he's in his prayer closet again. That's why he's driving down the road and he's praying again. That's why every chance, you know, because he believes it avails much. And again, I pray. But I look at myself and I just feel like, brothers, just to be honest, I think I probably believe it avails a little. I know it does a little. But do I believe it avails much? If we're going to stand in this war, Paul says, I exhort, first of all, prayer. And supplication be made. Pray and intercede for yourself and others. We're in this battle. And I know you sense it at times, and I sense it at times. We're in a battle, and here's a soul at stake, whether it's one of our children, or it's a brother, or a sister, or a lost person on the street, or it's wherever it is. And we realize we're in a war. I've said this. If only they let me make their decisions for them. Right? I could make so much better decisions than they're making. If they just let me... But God didn't make it that way. Because God knows that too. He can make way better decisions. But He says, I'll let you choose. And so on planet Earth, He does too. God said, intercede. If you want to stay in the war and you believe in healthy fighting, learn how to pray. Number three, 1 Timothy. We're going to jump to and grab. That's just a couple of them around this verse. Those of you who want to grab these war verses and look at more surrounding points, and you get more application out of them. 1 Timothy 6:12. The second verse, we're going to find points, so I don't know how many we'll pull out of here. 3, 4, and 5. Maybe. 6:12 says, fight the good fight of faith and lay hold on the eternal life. I want to jump just a little bit before this and what he's talking about before he says this. So in verse 6 of chapter 6, before the verse, the key verse we're looking at here on fighting, he says, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we're going to carry nothing out. I want you to remember, Timothy, godliness with contentment is great gain. You brought nothing into this world, and you're going to carry nothing out of this world. Can I call it number three? Be careful with your stuff, Timothy. Stuff can become way too important. Stuff. We actually chuckled about it as an extended family. We had a little time together and spent a couple nights somewhere. And it's amazing the amount of stuff it takes to keep us going. Just for a couple of days. Stuff. Piles of stuff. Bags and suitcases. And you probably all heard the cliche too. Did you bring the kitchen sink too? Because you brought everything else. Stuff. Well, we think what we bring to these family get-togethers are just necessities. We don't bring that many of the extras. Okay, we brought a couple games and we brought a couple, you know. But, you know, we're traveling and you have to haul it, and so you just bring the necessities. And do you know how much stuff you left behind back at your house? It's so easy for stuff. That's these thorns that's growing up around us to kind of be really, really important. Godliness with contentment. Content. And not finding fulfillment in stuff. Not finding too much happiness in our stuff. But to realize godliness with contentment. In the midst of this war over here, and this soil with lots of thorns growing up, let's be careful with our stuff, that it doesn't wrap its tentacles around us and our stuff becomes important. And I don't know what the list of stuff is supposed to be. We're each going to have to come up with a list in our own minds. But to some of us, some of our stuff, the things that we have, I don't even know what to put on the list. For some people, the stuff is their clothes. For some people, their stuff is their guns or their vehicles. Some people, their stuff is their houses or the way their houses look. To some people, the stuff is, and I don't know, you're going to have to put some of that in there. Just stuff. Godliness with contentment. I'm content. It's okay. I don't need the newest thing that glitters and shines and attracts my attention. That's the way the world runs. You know, that's how it's going around, right? Create discontent so that they buy the stuff I have to sell. That's the way the world goes around. Feeding discontentment. Constant bombardment with billboards and advertisements and you really need this new thing. What was the one? Josiah got a speedometer for his birthday, and on it, it said, do you remember, son? What was the little advertisement? Bicycle computers. Fix, I didn't say fix anything. And we all laughed at it. A bicycle computer. And that's supposed to fix all a boy's problems just right there. Got it.
But that's advertisement. I want to make you just a little bit discontent. And if you would just get this thing, oh, you would have it. A bicycle speedometer. That's all right. I'm happy my son can have a speedometer on his bicycle. That's fine. But do we just constantly have this itch? We need this newest or the different or the... That's why they keep changing the models of cars and the way they look, right? Because the next one looks just a little bit better. How far do you think a company would go? Let's say GM would take the theory. Contentment's good. This car works good. We don't need to change the style model. Let's just leave it the way it is. What do you think would happen to the company? It'd go under. No time flat. Because the world is not built on contentment. Are we? Am I? We are influenced by what's around us. We are. We are influenceable creatures, and that's a good thing, so that we can learn to influence each other and get along, right? If we were too independent, we couldn't get along. But we have the bombardment of these thorns growing around us saying, be discontent with what you have. There's something a little bit prettier, a little bit nicer, a little bit handier, a little bit faster. And I realize we have to find the balance. We can't just keep on pounding one nail at a time and everybody else is using nail guns, so we've got to upgrade. But we're in a war, okay? Can I just remind you, brothers and sisters, as you're making your choices in life, Lord, am I content? Am I content? He goes on. And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. That's right. And then verse 9, but they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil. Which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Thou, O man of God, flee these things. My point number 4 is I'm going to title it Money and Business. Men, we're in a war. Had a nice talk with my son the other day and said, son, you know, you're grown up. You as a man will be responsible to make money and probably have a business or work in business to support your family. That's a God-given responsibility to us men, right? God said, do this. Take care. And in fact, if you don't take care, worse than an infidel. We know all those verses. But I'm talking about the other side right now. The other side is just a little bit more. A little bit more fulfillment. If we had a little more cushion, or we could make just a little bit more. And the old car is just, when's it going to fall apart? And I really should have a little bit nicer one. And the truck, and the business, and the whatever, and the drive. And if I lose that job, there goes $5,000 down the drain. I just missed it. And I know those thoughts. That's why I can say them. I'm not trying to hide anything. I know those thoughts. God says, be content, Mickey. Don't cast off the responsibility to take care of your family. Be content. That love for a little bit more, a little bigger cushion, a little nicer whatever, a little QuickBooks, okay? It compares this year's income and last year's income. It knows how to feed it. And it shows you right there, there's a graph with a click of a button. And those of you who run QuickBooks probably know where this is. And it compares with last year. And what's your percentage of gross income, your percentage of net income, and even just, you know, it graphs them. And you can just watch it. And the point is, you're supposed to push this year just a little bit more than last year. And the percentages are supposed to... Is that what Jesus would do? Brothers, we're supposed to provide for our families. I'm not taking that down. But do you see what I'm saying? The tendency is for those graphs and that QuickBooks stuff to take over, and it motivates you instead of remembering we're in a war. See what I'm saying? Again, I'm in it too. I know those graphs. I know where that is in QuickBooks. So what's that tell you? I need to be careful. I'm in a war. And I know what it is to say, all right, this year, income wasn't as good as last year. Does that bother me? Is it okay? Am I providing for my family? Am I able to give? Am I able to all the thing God commands us? Sorry, I'm looking over here mostly, okay? Brothers, don't forget, you're in a war. And God says contentment is great gain. Not a half a percent more over last year. That's not great gain. That is potential for being pierced through with many sorrows. Can we remember that? That's potential for being pierced through with many sorrows. I'm still making payments. I like the idea. I'm going to be debt-free one of these days, right? I like that. But you know what? On the other hand, where I'm getting the money from, they're blessing me to use it, make these payments. I don't have to pay them anymore. Relax, Mickey. They're content. I should be content and happy and not this constant edge to bump this graph just a little bit more. Well, you can say, well, if I can bump the graph, I can give more. Then good, do it. Right? But I knew the tendency. I'm a man. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And they that will be rich, temptation, snare, foolish, hurtful lust, drowning, destruction, perdition, evil, covetousness, erred from the faith, pierced through, many sorrows. When will we ever catch on? You get it yet? Let's be content. Let's be careful. I am not shunning shirking your responsibility. I am not shunning making money to give and to take care of our responsibilities. Let's be careful of that inner itch for just a little bit more. It's called covetousness, and it's dangerous. And we can get caught up in that and forget the real war that we're in. Number 5. But thou, O man of God, flee these things. And my number 5 I'm going to title Purposeful Decisions Against. That's it. Can I stop there? Purposeful decisions against. Whatever you know you need to fight against, make some purposeful decisions against. You know there's going to be onslaughts. How can I make some purposeful decisions? And here, years ago, my wife and I decided at the end of the year, if we were renting, we didn't have payments, and you cannot find what I'm going to say in the Bible. This is one little application, and I only did it for 1 year, okay? So don't think this is amazing. But I decided, December 31, no more money in the account than January 1 of the same year. You know what that does? All of a sudden, the motive for one more hour, it can kind of cut back on it if you're working by the hour. I was working by the hour. One more hour, all of a sudden, what am I going to do with this? Okay, I'm going to give it. Well, then do you have a burden for where you're giving it? Do you see what I'm saying, what that can do? Make some, and I'm not, that is not a Bible application. That's something I did, again, 1 year. But that year, if I was going to work extra hours, it was with purpose, because I didn't personally get benefit from it. Does that show how selfish we can be sometimes? Men? Sorry, talking over here a good bit, ladies. I think you can find some application if you want. But do you see what I mean, men? Again, it's godly to work. It's right. It's of God. And it's godly to have money to give. That's right, and it's of God. So please, I'm not trying to take that away. But do you see this principle? Make purposeful decisions against. If you know the next new whatever is sparkling and has a bit of attraction, maybe you should go to your brother, or you should go to you sisters and say, you know what, this next new thing is a little attractive to me. I don't think I'm going to get it. I'm going to put up with what I have. And I'm going to tell you so that if I get it, I know I've got to deal with somebody face to face. Or if I buy it, or I make it, that dress fabric just looks like the ultimate. But you know what? I have a tendency to vanity. I'm not going to do it. I think those can be valuable decisions sometimes. Making purposeful decisions. I'm in a war. I have a fight I'm in the midst in. I dare not get distracted. flee these things. And then he says, follow after. So now there's something to pursue. And this is number, again, I'm jumping over certain ones here. So what are we at? Number, is this five or six?
Five.
Thank you, brother. Number five, purposeful decisions for. We had purposeful decisions against. Now we have purposeful decisions for. He says, follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. So make some purposeful decisions. And maybe it's as simple as this year, I'd like to read through the Bible. I had some emails come to me. Mick, you suggested some Bible reading plans. What were those? Could you send them to me? I'd like to read through the Bible this next year. Great. A good decision. You're making a positive decision for. It's not a decision against, warding off. Those can be made. A positive decision for. And so whether, again, it's stuff, the earlier ones, it's things, it's money, it's business, or it's making... I was trying just to go over the things we talked about here. Clear conscience, times of prayer. You know, here's another decision for. A while back, I realized, you know, we were actually in Zanzibar still. Do I believe, and this was bothering me back then, my, that's kind of convicting. I felt like I must only believe the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails a little. And I said, I'm going to just spend 15 minutes in intercession, specifically for Zanzibar. And maybe to some of you, you say, my, what a wimpy spiritual fellow he is. Okay, but I was amazed. Some days that was no problem. But there were some days I was getting in bed and, oh, I didn't get 15, just 15 minutes. Specific intercession for Zanzibar. That's what it was there. I went to my wife and just said, I'd like to make this commitment. Would you help me, remind me when we're getting into bed, whatever. Hey, Mick, did you have it? Yes, good. Did you? Uh-oh, nope, I'll be back. Disappear, 15 minutes. Intercede for Zanzibar, where I was laboring. Just 15 minutes. Just try it. Again, it's just a suggestion. You don't find this application. Pick up something and for 1 month, every day, 15 minutes of specific intercession for something. You'll be amazed how much purposefulness it takes. And as you said, brother, making decisions, changes. I forget what you said, you know, looking at a new year. And again, yeah, let me just skip all my excuses. Purposeful decisions for. Do that. Follow after righteousness, godliness. Make some purposeful decisions for things. Jump to 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. We read, endure hardness as a good soldier. The verse just before it, before he's talking about enduring hardness, do you know what it says? So if we're at number 6 here, it's teach. Teach. Open your mouth and teach, Timothy. And the vast majority of us actually have a platform to teach. The verse before it says, and the things which thou hast heard of among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who should be able to teach others also. Take what you have, open your mouth, and tell someone else why you do what you do and think what you do. Actually do that. As a father, there are times things go through my mind. This would be a good thing to share with my family, with my children. I'll do that sometime. And do you know how many times I can remember a couple weeks later I still haven't said it? So I've talked about it with my wife. And she said, well, Deuteronomy talks about talking by the way. Learn to do that. And she does a better job of that than I do. When it comes into your mind, there are times it's not right to say things. You know, I understand. There are better and worse times. But open your mouth and speak. And I've found as I just do it. Not with a harshness or not with a strength or, but son, daughter, I've been thinking about this. What do you think about this? Engage them, ask them, and create a platform for yourself to say, well, here'd be my perspective on A, B, C, whatever it is. Brothers, especially us, open your mouth and talk. Teach. That's one way to help remind yourself and those around you and under you you're in a war. And to give them a warfare mentality. You mothers, many of you do a good job at that. Thank you. Day in and day out, you rub shoulders with your children. Keep doing it. Remind them, children, this is why we do this. And this is why we do that. We're in a war here. Yeah, go ahead and do this. teach so that you can teach others, so they can teach others. And then he says, endure hardness as a good soldier. Do you think it's always easy to relate to others? It's not for me. And I'm going to guess it's not always for you. Relating to others is a huge issue in life. Do it well. And do it with those that are under you, those you're called to give direction and influence. Open your mouth, draw them out, and share your thoughts. That helps pull us together and remind each other why we're doing what we're doing. Children, brothers, sisters, in the church, in the home, in the world around us. Let's learn to open our mouth and speak. Heard these things of many witnesses, commit them to faithful men who teach others also. Endure hardness, war a good warfare, be a good soldier. And then he says here, well, I'm going to just pull on this one here. Endure hardness. Where are we at? Number 6 or 7, brother? You're the one. Endure hardness. Something difficult stands in front of you that needs to be done. Do it. Period. Right? Something you don't feel like doing, but you should anyway. Do it. Isn't it that simple? Oh, but. Yeah. No buts. Do it. Endure hardness. Be a soldier that says, I'm supposed to conquer this mountain. I'm supposed to do this job. And nobody ever told me it'd be easy. I didn't enlist here expecting a lazy chair life. I enlisted expecting war. Brothers and sisters, do it. We're in a war. Endure hardness. Oh, but it's difficult. How's that talk going to go? How's that relationship going to go? How's that humbly before God? Do it. Just do it. But God says to do this and we're struggling with... Just do it. Endure hardness. Some of us are going through difficult things. Some of you. I know that because I'm a human and you're a human. Keep going, okay? Keep going. Keep doing what you know is right. Keep apologizing. Keep taking the blame. Keep helping. Keep sharing honestly. Whatever it is, keep going, brothers and sisters. That's a key in a war here. Endure hardness. Patient continuance. Keeping on, no matter what. When it's right, simply do it. No man that warreth. I think I'm at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Number 9. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life. I'm going to title this number 9, busyness. Being busy. Let's be careful. He that wars doesn't get too entangled with this life. He doesn't allow this life to pressure him into a mold and do what the very next thing is to do, even if it's... Do you know what I mean? And things just... Life is a blur sometimes. And it's just go, 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 and fast-paced... Wait a minute. Is this busyness, the affairs of this life, crowding out what I really should be doing and focusing on? You'll get distracted. If you're going to stay in the war, we can't allow the busyness of life, the affairs of this life, to distract us. Can't do it. We're supposed to be busy. We're supposed to, just like in the money issue, we're supposed to work. Well, we're supposed to be busy. We're not supposed to be armchair Christians that just have all the time in the world and they twiddle their thumbs and look at hunting, fishing, and what are those magazines that just make houses look gorgeous and sit back and just... No. We're supposed to be busy. About the king's business, but not distracted with just busyness. Right? We are in a war. I'm going to just do one more. I have a whole bunch of them, and you can find a whole bunch more. 2 Timothy 4, verse 7. And I want to look at an illustration before I close here. But one more point here. Number 10, I think we're at, I've fought a good fight. I've finished my course. He says, I've kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, not to me only, but unto them also that love his appearing. Brothers and sisters, he's going to come back. And there's going to be a crown that we're given someday. Number 10, to stay in this war, do it in the light of eternity. Remember, this life is short. It's passing. And what I get out of it, it's going to be gone soon. But there's a crown of righteousness, and it's coming, and it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be beyond anything you and I have ever experienced. This glorious place before our Heavenly Father. And again, forgive me if I share this illustration, but it blesses me probably most every time I think about it. A little birdie, it's just a parable, a little birdie flaps down to planet Earth. And just picture planet Earth as one hunk of solid steel. Okay? 24,000, 25,000 miles around this hunk of steel. This isn't a bullet this size. It's a solid hunk of steel. 8,000 miles through planet Earth. All steel. Every 1 million years, a little birdie flaps down to this hunk of steel. He sharpens his beak. Gotta sharpen my beak. And he flies away. 1 million years later, this little birdie flaps down to this hunk of steel. Sharpens his beak on it. Flies away. 1 million years later, this little birdie, okay, you getting the picture? Flies down, sharpens his beak. When the little birdie wears this hunk of steel down to nothing, eternity has begun. You get that? I don't either. Eternity is a long time. Let's not get distracted with this life and what this life has to offer. Eternity is yet to come, and it's a long, long time. Let's make decisions in light of that. And remember, this little war we're in, it'll soon be over. It'll soon be gone. Brothers and sisters, don't forget, we're in a war. Just one little illustration or example. 2 Samuel chapter 11. Of someone who didn't forget that he was in a war. 2 Samuel chapter 11. Here's someone who didn't forget. Verse 7. And when Uriah was coming to David, David demanded of him how Joab did, how the people did, and how the war prospered. And David said to Uriah, go down to your house and wash your feet and forget that you just came from the battlefield. Can I insert that? Isn't that what he was doing? Uriah, you come. I know the people of God are out there on a fight. They're in a war. They're in a battle. And I'm calling you back, Uriah. And we know David had ulterior motives. And we're not going to dig into that. But David had ulterior motives, but he wanted Uriah to come back home. And he said, Uriah, I want you to just go to your house, wash your feet. And your Uriah departed out of the king's house. And there followed him a mess of meat from the king. Uriah, go take it easy. And even here is a whole bunch of wonderful food. Go to your house. Kick back. The people of God are out at war, but Uriah, you go take it easy. But Uriah, look at that in verse 9. But Uriah. Can God look down and he can see all of us and he sees me and he sees you? Can he, as he scans over, says, these people, you know, they're getting distracted. But Noah, right? But Abraham. But Uriah. And put your name in there. But Uriah slept at the king's house with all the servants of his lord and went not down to his house. He said, no way. And when they told David, saying, Uriah went not down into his house, David said to Uriah, camest thou not from thy journey? I mean, you had it hard, Uriah. Not only were you fighting, then you had to come on a long journey. And by the way, that's not hopping in your car, turning on the AC, kicking back and relaxing. That's hard work, right? Journeys were hard work. Some of us know journeys can be hard work. Even in air-conditioned vehicles, they can be hard work. Much less the hard work they were to him. Uriah, you were on a journey. Why then didst thou not go down into thy house? And Uriah said unto him, David, listen, David, do you see the beauty in this? Here's David, a man of God. And I'm not trying to put David down here, but David made a sin. I shouldn't just call it something small. And he was in the wrong. And one of the things I think was wrong with David, he forgot he was in a war. He forgot. And he relaxed, right? But here is a man in the kingdom that God says his eyes go back and forth across the globe seeking for a man whose heart is perfect towards him. And then he blesses. He's looking for that. And as God's eyes were going back and forth, he saw David. And I think he knew, oops, David. Oops. David, you're forgetting you're in a war and you're laying your sword down. Danger, David. You should realize you're in danger. He didn't. But as his eyes were going back and forth, and why God does plays out the world the way he does, I don't always know. But he saw a man who was being faithful, and he ended up not only being killed, but his family and his wife and the mess that ended up there. God's eyes were going back and forth, and he saw Uriah. And he tested Uriah. David tested Uriah. However you want to, sorry, I'm not trying to make a point out of that. Uriah says, no, not going to do it. David, the ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents. They're in a war, David. I can't come back here, kick up my feet. I'm pledged to the kingdom of God and to the people of God. I can't sit back, kick up my feet and take it easy. Can't do it, David. Can't do it. The ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents. And my lord Joab, the one I'm serving, and the servants of my lord, they're encamped in open fields. Shall I then go into mine house and eat and drink? Lie with my wife as thou livest and as thy soul liveth. I will not do this thing. David said to Uriah, well, Uriah, David wasn't in the right place here. He didn't see it right yet. Nathan was going to come straighten him out. God was going to use another man to straighten him out. But he wasn't yet. David said, Uriah, well, tarry here today also, and tomorrow I'll let you depart. So Uriah abode in Jerusalem that day and the morrow. And when David had called him, he did eat and drink before him. He even made him drunk. By the way, servants, give him lots of wine, okay? Dump it in him. Give him all he wants. Hopefully he'll lose a little bit of his thoughts. And at even, he went out to lie on his bed with the servants of his Lord, but he went not down to his house. I won't do it. Uriah said, David, the people of God are at war and I'm with them. I'm not kicking back and relaxing. Brothers and sisters, can I just be a little reminder to you this morning? We're in a war. Don't forget. And I just looked at a few applications surrounding these verses in Timothy. There are many of them. You can go around those verses. There's lots more applications there. Pull them out. God, what's this mean to me? How do I not forget I'm in a war and stay engaged in the midst of the prosperity and everything that's all around me? Can we pray? Father, will you help us? Help us not forget that we're in a war. Lord, you've left us on planet Earth, and I think of Jesus' words so often. You don't want to take us out of the world, but you want to keep us from the evil. Would you help us? Help us, Lord. Keep us out, away from the evil that is in the world, though you want us left in it, living holiness. So bless my dear brothers and sisters here. Thank you for them. I ask you to help them, Lord, to remember the war that they're in. And would you help me, Lord, as in my little spot, would you help me not to get distracted, Lord? And you know me, I think I don't believe in prayer, according to my life anyway, enough. So wash me clean, Lord, and help me know what I need to do to properly be engaged in this war. Thank you for your patience and the loving, glorious captain that you are to us. Thank you. Amen. Bless you all.